I'm Artie Moscow-Wayne. Welcome to Radio Times. Chances are you saw a wedding photo that went viral this week. It was not of a bride and groom, but of a father and a stepfather. In the picture, as the dad walks his daughter down the aisle, he grabs the hand of the stepfather and pulls him into the procession. The stepfather was brought to tears, as were a lot of people who saw the image. Well, we were also moved by the photo that got us thinking about stepfamilies that are much more common than a generation or two ago. Blended families have unique challenges for the parents, for the children, and for the relatives. They also have unique rewards. So today on Radio Times, how to make it as a stepfamily. Joining us here in our Philadelphia studio is Kenneth Kovelman, chair of the Department of Couples and Family Therapy at Thomas Jefferson University. He's also a senior staff therapist at the Council for Relationships. And Kenneth Kovelman, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you for inviting me.
You're very welcome. And joining us by telephone is Patricia Papernow. And she's director of the Institute for Stepfamily Education. She's the author of Surviving and Thriving in Stepfamily Relationships, What Works and What Doesn't. She's also a psychologist in private practice in Hudson, Massachusetts. And Patricia Papernow, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Nice to be with you.
Let me start with you, if I could, Patricia. Why do you think this image, there are several images, but this image of this father grabbing the stepfather's hand and dragging him into the procession, why do you think that had such an impact on the web?
Well, I think there are a couple of reasons. The first is that step-parents have a difficult position in a new family, even in a well-established family. You're an outsider. You're an outsider to a very deeply established relationship between the parent and the child. And kids often have a hard time with a new step-parent, so they may be distant. And then if there's an ex who's having a hard time, step-parents get pushed out even a little more. So the combination of being invited in at such an important point and being invited in by the dad, it made me cry. It made me cry again when you even talked about it just now.
I will share my tears with you as well, Patricia. But does it also tell us, Kenneth, that there are stepfamilies that work and that care about each other and care about the children?
Absolutely. And it also, I think, speaks to the idea that stepfamilies are seen culturally as somehow very difficult and distant. And so this played against the stereotype about stepfamilies and people not getting along. And I think that's why it had such an emotional resonance for people.
Do you like the term stepfamily? I mean, we think of the evil stepmothers. Do we need to rebrand this kind of family?
Well, I think that, you know, there have been many, many attempts to rebrand families. They've called them step families. They've called them second families. They've called them blended families. None of them are good
really
names. Now, the language interferes, I think, with people being able to connect and bond with each other.
You know, I have a slightly different take on that, which
ahead,
is
Patricia.
That as a step parent, I've been both a step parent and the parent in two different families. As a step-parent, you are a step removed to start. I think that's part of what's so hard, and it does take time, much more time to establish a relationship. It's not an automatic relationship. So I actually have more positive feelings. We certainly do have a lot of negative stereotypes, but you are a step removed, and it's going to take you a bunch of steps to get in, and sometimes it's very slow, especially if the kids are over 8 or the girl is like 11, 12, 13.
Yeah, and I do want to pick up on that. Go ahead, Ken.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I mean, I think that that's a very, that is the central job in, you know, working towards some kind of integration, is how to bring together somebody who is an outsider into what has been a very strongly forged connection and set of connections. But just from a historical perspective, I think the term step family comes from the German. It comes from Stuf, where it means bereaved.
Ah.
And so that was the basis for that terminology. And
so we've just kind of made it step and sort of lost, hopefully, some of that.
And in the beginning, most step families were as a result of bereavement. And it's much more recently that they're the result of divorce.
Well, interestingly, and actually all three of us have some connection to being part of a step family. As you mentioned, Patricia, you are. Are there certain things that surprise? I mean, both of you are therapists. You know about psychology. You know about families. Were there certain things for you, Patricia, that just surprise you by being a stepmom?
Well, it's very interesting, you know, that I think one of the moments that was especially humbling for me was a moment with my stepdaughter, my second family, who I'm it's now 20 years, but this is in the first year or two, and I had a fairly good relationship with her. Her mother walked into the room to get something, walked into the house, and this girl had to turn completely away from me and towards her mother, and I was left hanging outside, and that's what my stepdaughter needed to do. She was 16 at the time, I think. And I was stunned at how hard it was. And it was just a moment, you know, just a moment. But it really humbled me.
What did it, I mean, did you feel hurt?
I felt hurt and stunned. And I think what I always tell step-parents is you need to be able to reach for your partner. Your partner is not left out, so it's hard for the partner to get sometimes how left out the step-parent is. It's not just that if you jumped in, you'd be fine. My stepdaughter needed to turn to her mother. I was, you know, when you shun people, it's a punishment in some cultures. It's stunning. And I needed to reach for my husband, and I needed him to get it and give me a really big hug.
And did he?
He did. He's a sweetie.
Okay, good enough. How about for you, Ken? What have you learned being part of a step family?
Well, there were many specific moments, but I don't want to embarrass my family.
That's okay. But, you can embarrass yourself, but right, not your family, right?
Right. But what I really learned, I think, and my wife is a therapist also, is how much you have to talk about it to try to understand what it's like.
Boy, is that true?
For the other person. I was really floored by the amount of time and energy it took for us to, and we communicate fairly well.
Right.
And we're educated. We knew what we were getting into, and most people don't, well, at least I thought I knew what I was getting into. Most people have no idea what they're walking into. We had read all the books and we had done all, but it took us an enormous amount of time and energy to understand what it was like for her to have her loyalty to the kids and what it was like for me being the outsider and trying to get in and how much we had to negotiate what that looked like because there are really no prescribed steps. There are no culturally, you know, given sanctions for what you should do. What does it look like?
Well, and Patricia, we were talking before going on the air here in Philadelphia, and Kenneth was saying that, you know, for first families, the couple largely gets together and then there are children that come later. So there's a chance for the couple to kind of get to know each other. This doesn't always work out this way, but then the children come along. But with step families, the kids are already there.
The kids are already there, and also in a first-time family, the kids are born usually hardwired for attachment to both parents, and the step family starts with the kids hardwired for attachment and having a history of attachment with their own parent and not with a step-parent. And all of the agreements in my family, grape nuts, is it a form of cardboard or a breakfast food?
Grape nuts, really? People
right.
still eat that stuff. I didn't know that.
Yeah, right. My daughter and I thought it was a breakfast food. So Ken is so right. There is so much to talk about, and oftentimes at moments you least expect it, you know? Mm-hmm. I make a tuna fish sandwich for my stepdaughter. I know what a tuna fish sandwich is. You know, it's got a few little crunchy things in it, a nice whole wheat toast, toasted. And for them, a whole wheat sandwich is white bread and no things.
And no things, right. Exactly. These are the little things.
Right. There's a great, I don't know if you remember the movie Man of the House by Chevy Chase.
Oh, that is such a, I just saw a clip of it.
Right. So there's a classic scene just about what you described where he's the step-parent and he moves in with the mom and her 10-year-old kid who've been living together alone for a long time. So they have all their rituals and they have all their ways of doing things. And he gets up one morning and he wants to please everybody, Chevy Chase, and he makes this breakfast. And he makes, you know, eggs Benedict. And
eggs
this,
Benedict.
Right. And the kid comes up and he, like, wants to throw up about everything that he's done. And he says, do you understand the idea of cholesterol? And
oh, dear.
So it's a classic scene. It's a great.
But it shows how sometimes these little little
absolutely.
Well-intentioned
it's
moments.
It's the moments that define the culture of the family, that, you know, these families are two different cultures. And people have to figure out a way to bridge that gap in cultures. And
it's tough.
The
culture is a good way to put it. I often say we've got to change the metaphor, that metaphor of blending makes you think that you're doing well when you're all blended. But it's actually a lot more like bringing a group of Japanese and a group of Italians together and say, live closely together. We're not going to do it by everybody eating pasta with chopsticks. It's going to take time. And there are lots of little surprises, you know, like when the Italian hugs the Japanese and the Japanese feels offended, you know, lots and lots of those kinds of
things. Yeah, there are things about gift giving. How do people decide to give gifts? Do people celebrate birthdays? Do they not celebrate birthdays?
Wow.
Do they send cards? Do they not send cards? I mean, the list is endless.
Patricia, let me ask you a very practical or very sort of basic question here. Let's say a man or a woman, it doesn't matter, you know, is interested in someone and thinks they're probably going to remarry or marry that person. How do you suggest that they introduce that person to their child? And perhaps it depends if the child is 5 or 15, but are there some certain guidelines that you might have?
Well, I think the first thing to know is the adults are thrilled, and because some of the things that we're talking about for kids, often a new step-parent is a loss. You know, I mean, think what couples are like or love. They turn towards each other and away from kids, not because they mean to, it just happens. And for oftentimes, for a child, a new step-parent is a loyalty bind. If I care about my stepmother, I've betrayed my mom, and that's without any conflict between the adults. So the first thing is for the adults to know that you might be a lot more thrilled than your kids are, and that the adjustment for kids takes longer for many kids and is harder. So go slow. Wait till you know. You know, adults are eager. You want to get started. It's wonderful to find somebody that you love, especially if you've been alone. And just to hold the knowledge that kids were not going to be as thrilled. Under 8, they may be a little more excited. Kids with fewer losses and loyalty may be more excited. My daughter was excited for 3 weeks. That was the end of it for 4 years. Take your time. Go slow. Don't move in together right away. And that's hard for couples. It really is. It's very hard.
Well, hold on to that thought. And I know you want to add something to that, Ken. We do need to take a very short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation. Talking in this hour of Radio Times about how to make it as a stepfamily. And that's Patricia Papernow. She's director of the Institute for Stepfamily Education, author of a number of books, including Surviving and Thriving in Stepfamily Relationships. Kenneth Kovelman, chair of the Department of Couples and Family Therapy at Thomas Jefferson University. Also a senior staff therapist at the Council for Relationships. Give us a call. That phone number, 1-888-477-9499. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowen, talking with Patricia Papernow and Kenneth Kovelman about stepfamilies, the challenges of step-parenting, of being a stepchild, as well as some of the rewards as well. And again, that phone number, 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Ken, during the break, you were talking about the kind of fantasy, I guess, that the parents have in bringing or creating this new family.
Yes, and actually I want to give Patricia full credit for this. I mean, I actually learned this from her work.
Okay.
So it's not my idea, but I find it very helpful clinically with my patients, and I think it's useful for people to do as well, is to talk about their fantasies, about what they think this is going to be like, and hopefully to kind of get them out on the table, because their fantasies are often not what the reality is, that somehow this family isn't going to make up for all the hurts and the, you know, the vulnerabilities that people carry with them from their divorce into this new family. And until you begin to talk about that, you really don't have a handle on what it is you're bringing with you into this situation.
So, that's really well put. There's such longing for the new family to heal the old. It's grief, I think, sometimes to let go of these fantasies.
Patricia, can I just quickly pick up on that? I mean, do you think it's the stepfamilies face challenges because it's so hard to have a good divorce and to sort of take care of the first marriage before going into the second marriage?
Well, I think that contributes. You know, some of the challenges are because of the structure of what we've been talking about, that a step-parent comes in as an outsider and has to hang in that outside position for a long time, and the parent's the stuck insider connected to everybody. But it's absolutely true that child well-being is not lower in single-parent families and step-families because of divorce. It's lower because of conflict. And you can do divorce well. You do divorce well when you protect kids from conflict, and we're not talking about just screaming and yelling. Even moderate tension between adults in a first-time, never-divorced family, you see kids' attention, immune systems compromised, and it's because it compromises sleep for kids. Right. So doing divorce well is really important.
Right. I often say to my patients, the biggest gift you can give your child when you're going through a divorce is that they don't have to worry that your mother and father are in the same room together.
Oh, wow.
Oh, that's beautiful, Kenneth.
Wow. That they can be in the same room together and things are going to be okay.
Right.
And that's part of what was so touching about that photograph.
Right, exactly.
The grown-ups were grown-ups
on
behalf of the kids.
Right. And like that, you don't have to worry that your parents are going to be at your graduation and not be able to be in the same room. Or, you know, I see families where they have two separate bar mitzvahs for kids. Or
right.
They have two separate, you know, it's ridiculous that they can't manage their emotions in, you know, for the sake of their children. And that's a huge focus.
Let me ask both of you, and I'll start with you, Patricia. So let's say the family is together, and one of the children says to their biological parent, I hate him or her. I mean, I hate them. I don't like being in the same house with them. I don't know why you married them. Why do I have to live this way? Patricia, what do you say to, let's say they're 15, what do you say to that child?
Well, what the child is saying is, this is really hard for me. This is really hard for me. And what we know is that what helps kids, all people who are struggling, but especially children, is a sense that my mom or my dad gets me. They help me, Dan Siegel calls it, feel felt. And so what this child actually needs is for the parent to slow down, sit down, and say, boy, this has been hard for you, hasn't it?
Mm.
And that ain't so easy.
No,
you know,
it ain't.
If you're telling me you hate my, I'm much more likely to say, but he's a nice person.
Right.
You know, he takes you to school, he washes the floor, what's your problem? And even worse, I don't want to hear that ever again.
So what you're saying, Patricia, is it's important for the parent to acknowledge those feelings, and those feelings are real.
That's right. You know, that the child is saying, I hate, maybe saying there are things about this step-parent that are difficult for me.
Right.
But partly a child is often saying, I hate this new situation. What do you think, Kenneth?
Yeah, what do you think?
Yeah, I think that that's right on, that I think that they're letting you know that there's something that they're struggling with and that they didn't ask for this. The parents are the ones who go into to get married and the step-parent, and they,
right,
the kids come along for the ride. They're coming along for the ride, and that has to be acknowledged. That has to be safe to talk about, and that they don't have to love the step parent. They don't have to feel immediately attached to them. They're loyal to their, you know, to the old family, and I think I can talk about this without embarrassing my kids. But in the beginning, for the first few years, we would go on trips together or we'd go for a ride or going somewhere. And all they would talk about was what they used to do with their father.
The good old days, right?
Right, the good old days, where I was not present. I had nothing to contribute to that conversation. And it's a loyalty thing, and people have to understand that that's what it feels like for their kids, and that's hard.
I hope your wife held your hand or played footsie with you where they couldn't see.
She pinched me.
She pinched you a lot. Patricia, you talk about the importance in a step family of making sure that there are one-on-one conversations or activities between parents and children, whichever the parent is, but to make sure that there's that one-on-one time. Why is that important?
Well, it's actually important throughout the family, because in a step family, each system's needs are in competition. The couple needs time alone without kids around. The kid needs time with mom or dad, because that's where I feel that sense of secure connection. And also, step-parents and step-children need time alone together, because every time we're all in the same room, I remember playing cards with my stepdaughter in my first marriage. Her dad walked in, and I was chopped meat. You know, kids need their parents, not their step-parents. So that one-to-one time, it's kind of non-intuitive, because that idea of blended would mean we become a family by spending time together. And that is important, but one-to-one time needs each system in the family gets its needs for connection and being seen and known met.
In fact, you talk about shoulder-to-shoulder time, and I want to have you explain that to our listeners.
Well, I think for step-parents need to find a way to come in. And one way, by the way, not to come in is really important that step-parents not come in a disciplinary role. It's kind of non-intuitive in some families, but kids just aren't ready. The step-parent needs to retain the disciplinary role.
Hmm.
The parents. Yeah.
And the step-parent often wants a little more firmness, but and parents have often gone a little loose, but the step-parent needs to say that to the parent out of the kid's earshot. So by shoulder-to-shoulder, I mean, rather than the step-parent stepping in to tell kids what to do, find things, some third thing you both like to do. You know, teach my kid how to hit a ball. My stepdaughter taught me how to, do things on the computer. My daughter and my husband, in my second marriage, my daughter and my husband are both New Englanders. They have much more similar taste. I'm a Californian. So, you know, we go shopping for lights, and I'd look at a set of lights and say, that is ugly. And the two of them would say, that's beautiful. And that is actually how they got together. So things where the step-parent and the child, shoulder to shoulder, can enjoy something together.
You want to add to that, Kim?
Well, I would just say I agree with what Patricia is saying, but I think sometimes it's more fraught than people realize.
Yes.
Because, you know, I might want to play ball with my stepson, but that's what he did with his father.
Right.
And you're stepping into that sacred ground. And so you sometimes have to figure out what can we do that's
not sacred. That is really well put. Find something the other parent doesn't do.
Yeah. Right. And that establish that connection around, you know, things that are more neutral and not so emotionally loaded for the child.
But you like the idea of activities.
Oh, absolutely.
I
think that's when people create bonds. And that's what step family ultimately is about, is creating bonds where they didn't exist before. And how you do that.
Let me reintroduce the two of you. We are talking about step families in this hour of Radio Times, how to make it as a step family. And Kenneth Kovelman, chair of the Department of Couples and Family Therapy at Thomas Jefferson University here in Philadelphia, also a senior staff therapist at the Council for Relationships. Patricia Papernow, joining us by telephone, director of the Institute for Step Family Education, has written a book called Surviving and Thriving in Step-Family Relationships, What Works and What Doesn't. We're talking a lot about that. And she's a psychologist in private practice in Hudson, Massachusetts. Let me get some callers in on the conversation. And again, that phone number is 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and we'll get those comments in on the conversation. We have, it looks like, Janet from Harleysville. Janet, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi.
Hi there.
Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
We have a very unique step family in that my children were young when my husband and I got married, and we had moved out of state from their biological father. And my daughter in particular was five when my husband and I got married and was, you know, close to my husband. And then as she came into adolescence, it's been really hard for her with the loyalty thing between her biological father and her stepdad. And I just wondered, like, if you, like, what you guys would
advise.
We call
that a bump. James Bray has done a lot of longitudinal research on step families that, if it's any comfort to you at all, Janet, you have a lot of company, that kids, young kids, adapt much more easily. And then sometimes kids hit adolescence and all of the stuff that you haven't dealt with starts to come. And if you can, and it must be hard, surprising for you. Is that right?
Is that right, Janet?
Yeah, because she was close to my husband before, and then it seemed like the loyalty thing really hit hard when she hit, like, 14, 15.
Yeah, it's not unusual. And so all of the things you would do with a new stepchild, you're going to do with your daughter, you know, that she feels in a bind. That she has a big heart and there's room for both. Did she lose contact with her dad?
There was a period of time where she did. And when he comes, he isn't in a situation where she can go to visit him. So she missed out, I think, on a lot of the childhood stuff that her older brothers got. And she really has a longing for that relationship that she can't meet because her dad isn't available in the sense that my husband is.
Janet, let me see what Kenneth has to say. Anything you want to add to that?
Well, it sounds like she's missing her dad more than she's really angry at her stepfather.
Yeah.
And so I wonder if
maybe taking it out on the stepfather because he's there.
Yeah, that's certainly possible, yeah. So I just wonder if there is anything that the family could do to facilitate them connecting in some way, the biological father, I mean, and the daughter, that if there is some way that she could be, you know, helped to reconnect with him, that might go a long way to making it easier for her.
Janet,
it sounds like you also understand, Janet, what she's feeling, and really letting her know that you understand, I think that will help. You Skype or VC?
Yeah, I know they FaceTime and they talk frequently on, you know, on the phone. And when he's here, we do everything we can to facilitate them being, you know, together and having time together. It's just, I just hope she can appreciate her stepdad again in the way that, you know, I mean, I listen to her. And I'm babbling on. Anyway.
No, Jenny, you're raising some really good points here. It looks like Kenneth wants to add something else.
I was also going to say that, you know, when you think of this as a bump, the implication is that it could get better. And so I think you have to think of it as this is transitional, that it may, you know, she may not be stuck here forever, and that time.
Yeah, I agree.
Time helps that people mature and they understand things in a different way. In adolescence, their brain is still maturing. And so they may have a different perspective in a year or two. And that's something that if you keep talking to her about it and keep, you know, stay connected to her, that she may be able to work her way through this.
Yeah, Janet, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. And sounds like we all wish you good luck as well. Let me read an email from Richard who says, if the step-parent enters as a result of an affair, children often see that person not just as an interloper, but also as a destroyer. The aggrieved parent may keep that alive in the minds of the children for years to come, so the step-family never really gets started. And that's really Kenneth, a poignant and difficult situation.
It's very difficult. And certainly the way families start often has implications for how they continue. And so those kinds of situations that are emotionally very complicated resonate down through the years with people. And so it takes a lot of patience. Yeah. It takes a lot of understanding, and it takes a lot of working your way through it to hopefully get to a better place some point.
I mean, Patricia, are there things that parents in this case can do to help the children through this situation?
Well, I think Kenneth and I are absolutely on the same page on this. It's a much longer process. It's a more complicated process, and the step-parent's going to have to hang in that outside position for a longer time, so she or he needs a lot more support from their partner. Hugs. I do say to step couples, no physical contact in front of your kids, at least not in the beginning. It's too hard for kids. Right. It makes the adults often feel we're showing them a different way, but for kids it often raises that loyalty bind and the sense of loss. So, the step-parent is going to need a lot more hugs offline, a lot more moments where they turn to their partner and say, shoot, this is hard. And I have seen families work this through, and it sometimes takes a number of years, but I think when the adults are patient and can really be with the kids' pain, can say things like, this is complicated. It's complicated when somebody leaves for an affair. Affairs are almost always co-created, but the person who gets the attention is the one who got left, and often there's a ton of pain. But I have seen families work this through. I bet you have, Kenneth, as well. Am I right?
Yes, people do work it through, but I agree with you that it's a long process and it needs to be, there needs to be a lot of support for all members of the system. There needs to be support for the kids about how complicated it is. There needs to be the support for the outsider for how complicated it is. And for the biological parent, because they're torn
absolutely
in the middle. They're caught in the middle. So that's a very difficult position to be in.
Well, we are talking about step families, how to make it as a step family. A lot of calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen talking with Patricia Papernow, Director of the Institute for Step Family Education, and Kenneth Kovelman, Chair of the Department of Couples and Family Therapy at Thomas Jefferson University, talking about step families, some of the challenges that step families make, but certainly some of the rewards and some of what it takes to make it as a step family. And send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. We did read the email from Richard, and we've got calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. Patricia, I just wanted to go back to you and something that you mentioned earlier about early on in the step family, that it's really the biological parent who should be the disciplinarian. And one of the things that you have said is that in many ways, at least early on, the step parent acts more like a babysitter. And I underscored that because I'm not sure if step parents want to think of themselves that way. But explain what you mean by that.
Uncle, aunt, friend, an adult friend, what the babysitter does is enforce the rules of the house. And there often are some changes that happen when a step-parent comes in, but one of the things that I say to couples is two or three changes, not a whole new set of rules. Mm-hmm. So it means that the step-parent, a mom goes out and she says, Larry's in charge, no social media before homework is done. Larry's job is to say, I see that you're on your phone, and I'd like to give your mom a good report, the rule, rather than get off that phone right now.
Mm-hmm.
That's not easy to do.
No. None of this is easy to do. Ken, do you want to add to that?
Well, I would say also that, I'll talk from the man's perspective for a moment.
You're loud.
So I think for many men, especially people in my practice that I've seen, where they are the breadwinners in the family, they feel entitled to make the rules. You know, I'm paying for this becomes a mantra that I've heard over the years. And so while I am totally on board with what Patricia is saying, the execution of that is very, very difficult.
And it runs up against,
you know, how men are socialized. They're supposed
to be...
Well,
and let's add women. It's my house, says the stepmother.
Right.
It's
right.
Simple. They should be able to take their shoes off before they come in. It's simple.
Right. So it's a setup for conflict.
Yeah.
People have to understand, you know, that's what they're struggling with, that there's all these potential areas of conflict.
But that's helpful for the children to know that, at least for now, I'm using these sort of very clinical terms, but, you know, it's the biological parent who's going to sort of say what the rules are.
Yeah, it's your mom. This is your mom's rules. I'm enforcing the rules.
Right.
I'm reporting the rules, but I'm not coming in here to take over and be the dad, because that's ultimately what it signals.
Right.
And so, yeah.
When you do that well, right. I can tell you, I have three stepchildren from my husband, and my daughter was 12 when I met my husband. And they were, after 3 weeks, pretty much sworn enemies for about 3.5 years. It was very, very difficult for both of them. And what I can say is that what we did was I made sure that my husband did not discipline her. He would often say to me, "You're being a complete wimp," and he was probably right. And I would say to her, "You got to say hello to him. I know you're miserable that he's here, but you got to say hello. You got to be decent." At about year 3.5, it started to turn. And it started to turn partly because during those 3.5 years, he managed not to step into a disciplinarian role, and she managed to treat him at least basically decently.
Mm-hmm.
So there weren't scars there when they really finally got ready to connect.
So respect more than love?
Yes.
Yeah, and I would add just a little bit to that, is that even in families where the children are well behaved. I mean, my stepkids are really well behaved. They're not problem kids. You just still have to adhere to that kind of discipline, that you're not there to set the rules. And, you know, if you can do that, like Patricia said, things start to turn around.
We got a lot of people that want to join the conversation. Let me get Morgan from Princeton to join us on Radio Times. Hi, Morgan. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. My parents have each been remarried several times since they divorced each other. And I think the hardest permutation of that has been when there have been children from each previous marriage trying to come together, and how the parents deal with that and get the kids together, especially when there's very different parenting styles, and how not to get the kids to be sworn enemies, and how to, you know, make a whole family out of these two half families while respecting the history of the two half families, which I know you guys have touched on a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, talk about complexity, right? You've got these families bringing children together.
It's very complex. And, you know, I can relate a story about a family that I saw where the parents had multiple remarriages and the adult children were still loyal to the
Absolutely.
The family, the initial family, and tried to break up the new families. So, I mean, those loyalties run deep into people's bone marrow. And
was it best not try to bring all these complicated families together and just sort of...
Well, sometimes you have to recognize that this is complex and you can't impose a solution on people, and you can't make them go faster than they want to go. But one of the things I think we haven't actually talked about, and I would like to put it on the table, is the idea that some families don't acknowledge that they're step families. And what that does to them when they don't acknowledge that there are special circumstances here, that we are not a mini version of the nuclear family. We are different. And I had a family that came to me after 17 years of marriage, a step family, and they were still fighting about the children and fighting about, you know, money and fighting about why is my name not on the deed. And I said to them at some point in this third session or something, you know, you guys are a step family and we never, have you ever talked about that? And they like fell out of their chair like,
We are? Really?
We don't. Wow. We never considered ourselves a step family.
Yeah, I call those return and repair. You know, like, oh my gosh, that's what's been going on.
Yeah.
But just going back to the caller,
sure.
I think one of the, that idea of blending easily leads you astray. If you think that we've got Japanese and Italians here, that there are going to be some differences. In my family, you know, my daughter opened the kitchen closet door and it was floor-to-ceiling sugar cereal. We didn't have sugar cereal in my family. There was no way that my husband's kids were going to eat grape nuts. And I really didn't want my kids to eat sugar cereal. Yes, back to grape nuts. So she wanted to eat sugar cereal. Of course she did. So, you know, for the first while, they would eat sugar cereal, and my rule for her was, yep, they're used to sugar cereal. You get a bowl of grape nuts, and when you finish that, you can have some sugar cereal. And for my stepkids, no flaunting this, you know, to ask my husband to make sure they don't flaunt it in front of my kid. And it's uncomfortable.
Let me read an email. Morgan, thanks for the call. We email from Beth saying, my stepmother came into my life and started introducing me as her daughter in the same town where my mother lived. It felt like she was violating both me and my mother.
Oh, that's a big, that's a classic.
Is it? That's classic?
Oh, yes. I mean, it's a battle internally to figure out. I remember I've stepped over that boundary in my personally, and I introduced my son, my stepson, as my son, and I thought I was being loving, and
right.
I was obviously not. He had a father, and he, you know, wanted me to respect that, and he was right.
Yeah.
But it's a dilemma because you feel like you want to, you know, you want to show them that you care about them, and is that a way to do it or is that not a way to do it? And so people have to be very, very respectful of pre-existing relationships and what language they use. And kind of talking about with the kids about how do you want me to refer to you?
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, I think that's always a good idea. I always ask the kids. People say, what should we have them call us? Ask the kids. They know.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They know what they want to call you.
Let me get Meredith from Philadelphia to join our conversation. Hi, Meredith. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. I am an adult stepchild, and my sister and I have been having issues with my father's relationship, not because we have an issue with his wife, who we actually really like. We've liked from the beginning. We've been together for about 7 years now. But they, earlier in the program, you were talking about this, you know, idea of the fantasy family, and we both feel like they've got a lot of that going on. There's been a lot of emphasis on blending. When they got together, I was the oldest at 27, and the youngest was, I think, 20. So, you know, we all live in different cities, and it's just been very difficult because anytime we're all together, there's this very strong, like, I don't think I've spent more than a couple hours alone with my father in 7 years. And they're always talking about their blended family therapists and how we need to do things in order to make this work. And so ironically, we went from being really happy about the situation to becoming more and more sort of strained over time. And I was just wondering if you had any advice about how to, I don't know, set their minds at ease or...
I just want to say...
Yeah, Meredith, go ahead, Patricia.
You're the second adult stepchild, and that's because the rate of divorce has generally dropped in this country. Only 5% of people know that, but it's dropped except over 50, where it's gone up steeply. So I see, and I'll bet you do too, Kenneth, a lot of older recouplers with adult children, and the issues are very similar.
Hmm.
So all you can say to your dad is you so wish that this was like a first-time family, and Dad, it's not, and we're going to do a lot better if you can spend some time alone with us, we're going to do a lot better. And it sounds like you've got a new partner, a step-parent, who actually may be an ally. And sometimes that person is, if that person can be an ally, things go. She may be able to help you pull that off.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, Ken?
Yeah, well, I think there's also the dilemma of distance, physical distance. So when you live in different cities and you see each other less frequently, I think probably the parents feel some pressure to make something happen. Rather than give this process time. And, you know, they're older themselves, so, you know, they probably see the clock ticking at some level and feel pressure to try to, you know, accomplish a lot in a very, you know, limited space of time. And if people could talk about that and acknowledge that this is going to take time and we're interested in doing connecting, but we need, you know, we can't force it. We just have to.
We can't force it, and we need time alone with you, Dad.
Right.
You're still our dad.
Right.
And just tell it to him straight. Meredith, thanks for the call to Radio Times. I mentioned, and this show is also about the rewards of being in a step family, and I want to make sure that we spend a little bit of time on that. And from your perspective, Patricia, what are the rewards?
Well, you know, there's a role that I call an intimate outsider. You are close enough to your stepchildren that you know them really, really well. But you are just outside. You don't sometimes have some of the same triggers and reactivity that a parent does. So there is something very special about having all these really different kinds of people in your life. And kids talk about this. You know, if they're 5 or 6 years down the road, you know, my mom, in my mom's house, if you want to eat organic food, go to my mom's house. If you want to eat Twinkies, go to my dad's house.
Yeah, and I think it's actually, it's tremendously rewarding in the sense that you, it's tremendous training ground for people accepting differences and resolving differences and seeing that you can be in a different place where you were a few years ago. So there's a tremendous reward. And just speaking personally, one of the rewards that I have had is when my kids started to have grandchildren, and that shifted the dynamics palpably. I mean, we were always got along, but it you know, made us closer in a whole different way. And so if you can get to that third generation, if you can hang in there long enough, that often is a tremendous reward. And I'm very close to my step-grandchildren. They feel like my own. And, you know, that's been a tremendous
reward. And the other grandparents have been willing to share. Sometimes
yes.
The sharing gets hard. That's wonderful.
Yeah, so, I mean, there are all kinds of rewards that people can have.
We're almost out of time here. And, Patricia, we haven't really talked anything about the ex, whatever they, wife or husband. But, obviously, they're an important factor in any stepfamily.
Yes, and I think Kenneth said it earlier, the most important thing that ex-spouses can do is protect kids from conflict. And when they can't, it gets much, much more difficult. When they can, if we go back to rewards, about year three, we started including my husband's ex-wife in our Thanksgivings because my oldest stepkids were going to 3 Thanksgivings, ours, their mother's, and his wife's parents. And we've done that all along. So we're now 20 years in, and it's a big, huge tribe. And that, too, can be a real reward.
I'm going to end on that note. Patricia Papernow, thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times.
My delight, and great to get to know Kenneth a little bit as well.
Absolutely. She's the director of the Institute for Step Family Education, author of a book called Surviving and Thriving in Step Family Relationships. Kenneth Kovelman, thank you very much for joining us as well.
It's been a pleasure.
I learned
honored
a lot.
To be on with you, Patricia.
And he's the chair of the Department of Couples and Family Therapy at Thomas Jefferson University, also a senior staff therapist at the Council for Relationships. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes. You can find out much more about the program, how to download a podcast of the show, find us on Facebook, and follow us on Twitter. I'm Marty Moscone. Thanks for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times. Do stay with us. We'll be right back.